Okay. So, you know, there's a maisa, they say, you know, by Rabbunim from Shischa, one of the great Hasidish Rebbes, by Rabbunim. So they say that before he passed away, he said over the following maisa. He said that there was once a very, very wealthy Yid in Poland, and this guy, you know, he had a hobby or whatnot. He was very into expensive horses. He's very into expensive horses. And he spent a lot of money getting a very expensive horse. And so obviously if he now has this prized, you know, racehorse or whatnot, so now he has to build a beautiful barn, beautiful stable, and obviously an expensive horse like that with a beautiful stable, he has to have the best locks and the best ways of protecting the horse. So he spends a lot of money on locks. And that's not enough, obviously. He has to now spend money on a guard, on a watchman that's going to guard the barn and guard to make sure the horse is protected and so on. So that's what he does. So Rabbunim said that, you know, the first night that he had this watchman, you know, watching the barn and the stable of this expensive horse. So, you know, this Gavir, even though this guy came recommended this watchman, this, you know, the guard, but the Gavir was very nervous about the horse. He couldn't sleep. So in the middle of the night, he wakes up just to check on the guard to make sure that the guard is doing his job. So he goes to the barn and he notices that the guard is pacing back and forth and he's very much awake, even though it's late at night. So he's happy to see that. So he goes over to the guard and he says, you know, I'm so happy that you're awake and, you know, you're standing, you're guarding the barn properly. But let me ask you something. You look like you're thinking about something. Like, what's on your mind? So a lot of this mashal I can't explain. I don't know. But this is how it was said. That the guard said to the wealthy landowner, he said, you know, what I'm thinking about is a certain shiloh. I can't come up with the answer, but it's really bothering me, and it's keeping me up. He said, when you take a nail and you bang it into a piece of wood, like a carpenter banging a nail into a wall, like what happens to that part of the wall? Like what happens to that? You know, that was until now solid, and now there's a nail in it, so what happens to that piece of wood? Where'd it go? I can't figure it out. It's like, okay, fine. Whatever's working, fine, because I'm paid. The guy, the Baal Bus, goes back to bed. About an hour or so later, he's, you know, still tossing and turning, nervous about his horse. So he comes back down, and he sees the guard is still awake, and he's pacing back and forth again. And so he goes to the guard, he says, like, you know, what do you think about now? So he says, I'll tell you the truth, I'm thinking about the following question. I can't come up with the answer, and it's really bothering me. My question is that, you know, when you buy a donut or a bagel, like, what happened to the inside of the bagel and the donut? Like, where'd it go? I can't figure it out. Okay, fine. It's a funny guard. Goes back to bed. About an hour or so later, he also he can't sleep. He wants to double check, triple check. So he goes back to the guard, and he sees the guard's also pacing back and forth, and, you know, something's on his mind. So he says, no, what's bothering you this time? So he said, I'll tell you, like, this is my biggest question of all. He said, you seem to be a well-to-do person, Baruch Hashem. And obviously, you know, you're into horses. I see that, you know, you have a whole stable over here, so certainly you're into horses, and you have an expensive horse that you bought. Yes. And because of that, you spent a lot of money on having the best, you know, top-of-the-line stable for the horse. Yes. And you were so concerned about the safety of the horse, you spent a lot of money in getting the top locks and, you know, the best security system. It's true. Not only that, but you even went out of your way to hire me as a personal guard for the horse. It's also true. So what's the question? So my question is, like, what happened to the horse? Like, where'd the horse go? That was the horse. So that's what Rabbunim said. That was the Maisa, and then he passed away. That's the Maisa. So I don't know the bagel and the thing. I'm not sure exactly what that Maisa means. But what Rabbunim is saying is that there's a certain, like, there's a lot of things in Yiddishkeit that we do, and it's all about the horse. And what happens in Yiddishkeit, unfortunately, is that over time, the horse is gone, but the stable's there, and the locks are there, and the guard is there. Everything's there, but the horse is missing. It's like, what happened to the horse? So Amunah is one of those sugyas. Amunah is the horse, you know? And so all of Yiddishkeit, as we began to learn last week, all of Yiddishkeit is about protecting and giving context and giving expression to that horse, which is Amunah. And so what happens, Olenu, when the horse is gone and the barn is still there, the guard is still watching, but there's no horse, the horse is gone. So this is what we began to learn yet last week, which is, like, so what is Amunah? What is Amunah? What is Amunah Pshuta by the Teres HaChasidus? So The truth is that this topic is very much connected, as well, Beis Hashem, I'll talk about it a little bit tonight as well. This topic is very much connected with the time that we're in right now. We're entering into the time of Adar, getting close to Purim. Purim is a yontif, which is completely a munadik. Purim, remember if we learned last week, is that in Hasidus, there's an absolute rejection of Yiddishkeit, which is completely based on the intellect. A Yiddishkeit which is completely, completely rooted in keeping Torah mitzvahs because it makes sense, because the odds are that Yiddishkeit is true. Something like that. A Yiddishkeit, a faith which is completely intellectually based. Yiddishkeit sees, Chassidus sees that as not only unbecoming of the Jew, but it's something that's completely, it's abhorrent. It's not at all in sync with what Yiddishkeit's about. And the one yontif that sort of embraces that philosophy probably the most in terms of rejecting the intellect as being the only source of truth is Purim, right? The whole yontif of Purim is ad lo yada, not to know, to celebrate not knowing, to celebrate that part of the human being which is beyond seichel. That's what Purim is. So we're going to see that emuna, the complexities of emuna pshuta, is very much in line with Purim. But let's continue a little bit with what we ended off last week, which was the discussion we had last week was towards the end is okay. So where does emuna come from? Where does emuna come from? In the Torah of Chassidus, in the writings of the Mekubalim, emuna is not something that a human being has to discover. Emuna is not something that a human being or a Jew in particular has to acquire. There's no such thing. Emuna is already within the nefesh. Emuna is an expression of the deepest part of the soul of the Jew. When the deepest part of the soul of the Jew expresses itself, it comes out. The label that we give the voice, that most inner voice, that's called emuna. That's where emuna really comes from. So what does that mean exactly? So that's what we began to learn last week, exactly what emuna means. So the concept was, again, just to recap a little bit, was as follows. We find in the Sfarim, this is something that, you see this in many, many Sfarim, different camps and different schools, it's something that's completely accepted, which is that there's two different ways in which the Rabbanu Shel Olam expresses himself. There's two different ways in which we relate to him. Again, the language that I used last week to describe it was mitzidai or mitzidenu, from God's perspective or from our perspective. What's amazing, by the way, just on the side, what's amazing about these types of limudim is that despite the fact that to really understand the sugi, you have to get to touch very, very deep ideas. But what's amazing is that as deep as these ideas might be, and as sort of esoteric and non-practical as they might seem initially, the human being is everything that the Rabbanu Shel Olam created in the universe is within the human being as well. And so these deep ideas, they surface, they find their way, they express themselves within the human being in a very, very profound way. So Beis Hashem will see that a lot of things that we deal with in terms of just being a human being and the complexities of being a person, of being a Jew in particular, are coming from these deep concepts. So the concept is as follows. Again, there's two ways to look at the Rabbanu Shel Olam, there's two ways to relate to him. Again, just simply put, one way to look at the Rabbanu Shel Olam is what's described as mitzidenu from our perspective, which is that there's a world, there's us, there's that which is created, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam is there to give us life. The Rabbanu Shel Olam is the battery system for our machinery. You know, the Rabbanu Shel Olam gives us energy and gives us the ability to function, to accomplish, to move, to do, to build, to grow. That's seeing the Rabbanu Shel Olam mitzidenu from our perspective. That's one side. That's one side. Seeing the Rabbanu Shel Olam from that point of view, can create that perspective. It gives room. Let's put it this way: it gives room for there to be days and experiences where you feel that energy coming to you, where you feel the Rabbanu Shel Olam is with you and giving you life. And there are situations and circumstances in which that Rabbanu Shel Olam feels very, very different. So much so that maybe he doesn't even exist anymore. That's all mitzidenu. That's all from our perspective. So again, this perspective is the human being is the human being, the world is the world, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam is there just to be our king, to give us guidance, to give us life. That's called mitzidenu. And then there's another side, the other side of the table, is mitzidai from the Rabbanu Shel Olam's perspective. The Rabbanu Shel Olam, what that means is that there's another way of looking at reality, of defining reality. where it's not that there's a world and then the Rabbanu Shel Olam is the guiding light of the world, or the or what sustains light, what keeps it going, what gives it direction. The other way of looking at reality is that everything is still a part of Him. That instead of the Rabbanu Shel Olam just giving directives and giving instructions to the world, everything exists still within Him. In other words, it's all within the Rabbanu Shel Olam's mind. The mashal I gave last week is characters in a dream, where it's not the pshat that the dreamer is giving life to those characters and the characters have their own identity. No, the entire essence of the characters are completely a part of the dreamer himself. It's completely a part of that. These are two sides to reality. Now, you find these two sides there are certain code words throughout all the Svarim, even in Chazal, to describe these two sides. So, for example, in the writings of Chazal, in the Gemara, for example, there's a term that we call for Hashem, that we use the term all the time, that really, if you break it down, is describing these two sides of how to look at the Rabbanu Shel Olam. In Chazal, we find the term that referring to God as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We say that all the time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Holy One, blessed be He. So in the Svarim, they explain that term, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is describing, it gives a little bit of a window into these two sides of who is the God that you're talking about. There's the word HaKadosh, and the word Baruch Hu. What does HaKadosh mean? HaKadosh means the transcendent one, the one that's holy. Holy means separate and beyond, complete. Completely beyond any conception. That's describing the Rabbanu Shel Olam as it is mitzidai, from his perspective. From his perspective, all there is the Rabbanu Shel Olam. All there is, everything that exists in this world is a part of him. The way we describe, and for us as human beings, that's completely unknowable. Like, I have no idea what that means. We feel so real. We feel so independent. It's hard for us to even conceptualize, like, what would that be like to be completely part of the Infinite One himself. So we describe that side of God, that part of reality that's called, from his perspective, HaKadosh, something that's completely elevated and esoteric and beyond description. But then there's another side to that statement, which is Baruch Hu, that Hashem is blessed. What does it mean, Baruch Hu? The Rashba writes in Shuvas that the word Baruch means, it comes from a brecha, which means like a pool of water, something that's being funneled down. Something's being channeled down. Baruch Hu means that God, which a second ago by HaKadosh is like unknowable and unfathomable, we have no idea what reality is. No, there's another side, which is from our perspective, which is, no, there's a world over here and He's our King and He guides us, He blesses us, He infuses us with energy. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mentioned last week also, every single day we say in Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Lein Levod. Also, these two sides of the coin. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Echad means reality as it is a part of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And then there's Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Lein Levod, seeing the Rabbanu Shel Olam as our King. Two different sides. In the writings of Chassidus in particular, these two sides are described with other terminologies. The other terminology in Chabad Chassidus would be that the Rabbanu Shel Olam, it's coming from the Zohar Kaddish as well, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam is called Saiviv Kol Alman, surrounding all worlds. Another description of Hashem is Mamalik Olam, and He fills all worlds. What does that mean? Filling all worlds means that there's a world, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam fills it with energy and vitality and guidance and light and meaning. So Rabbanu Shel Olam is our battery. That's called reality from our perspective, that He fills our world. What does it mean that we describe Hashem as Soiviv Kol Olam, and surrounding all worlds? It means that the world is a part of Him. It's within Him. He encompasses it all. In Chazal, for example, one of the most phenomenal names of the Rabbanu Shel Olam is Hamakom, the place. And Chazal explained that the word Hamakom means Hu Makom Shel Olam Ve'en Olam Makom. The world is in God's place, not that God is in the world's place. That's describing again reality as it is from the eyes of the Creator, that everything is a part of Him. The Arizal also has this terminology to describe this, Al Pi Kabbalah, or not, it's not for now, but these are all different levels of description. Again, in Chaim V'Lozhner, it's our mitzideinu, mitzidoi, our perspective, God's perspective. These are all different sides. Now let's understand. If these as you mentioned last week, the difference between, despite the fact that these two ways of looking at reality don't seem to be able to go together, like it's either one or the other, like is there an independent world that God is sustaining? Or is everything just a part of Him and we're just characters in His mind, kviyachal? So by us, you would think you have to sort of make a choice. Like, which one is it? Is it Shema Yisrael Shem Kinesh Shem Echad, or is it Baruch Shem? But this is where Yiddishkeit, you know, this is what we believe, which is that despite the fact that these two things don't seem to make sense, but what we believe is that they're both 100% true. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's 100% true that there's a way of seeing reality as completely a part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And at the same time, it's also 100% true that there's a way of looking at reality as independent from the Ribbono Shel Olam, but sustained by Him and guided by Him. How these come together, again, that's beyond our intellect. We can't really process this. But here's the point. Here's the point. In Chassidus, we're taught that not always is the point to figure out the answer. Sometimes just knowing the dichotomy and understanding the complexities of reality is itself enough. It's itself enough. So it's like this. In Chassidus, we're taught that within the human soul is implanted these two sides. These two angles, these two perspectives of reality are already implanted within the Jewish soul. And as I mentioned last week, where does Emunah come from? True Emunah Pshuta is coming from that part of the soul, the deepest part of the soul, that sees things from God's perspective, that sees all of life as a part of the Ribbono Shel Olam still. And that's where Emunah comes from. Emunah doesn't come from some intellectual idea that you read in a book or some proof or whatnot. That's not where Emunah is. What Emunah is that part of the neshama that no matter what happens in life, no matter what crazy things happen, there's no the very concept of the world being absent of God doesn't compute. Because all there is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Take a look at the Maror Makamim that you have. I don't know if we have enough. If you have, maybe you can share from people. So the first Maror Makamim you have is from Sefer Mamorim. This is from the Rebbe Rashab of Lubavitch, or Shalom Dov Ber of Lubavitch. It's from the year Tufresh Ayin. So he says like this, the Inyan, it's everything we just said. The first few Maror Makamim is basically just going to be summing up everything we've been talking about until now, just showing where Emunah comes from. Just Pasha, where Emunah comes from. So he says like this, the Inyan Emunah Pshuta Sheish B'Kol Echad V'Echad Mi'Yisrael. If you don't have them, you can just listen in. The concept of simple faith that every single Jewish person has, Shema Minim Ba'achtos Hashem, that we believe in the oneness of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ubis Havas Ma'ayin Liyesh, and the fact that the world was created by Him. Ukai Gavnan, all the things that we believe. All these concepts of basic Emunah, the Toikef Emunah, Emunah Pshuta means that every single Jew has within them already a strength of faith, She'ein Tzorech Al Zeh Shum Raya Klal, that doesn't need any proof. It doesn't need any proof. Masha Chachmei HaPhilosophia Nilu LaHasik B'Sichlam Efes could say all the things that the Chachamim of philosophy tried very, very much to prove to themselves and maybe grasped a little bit of these ideas. Ubinishmas Yisrael, implanted within the Jewish soul, hareze hanocha muchletes benafsham. This is already an assumption, it's pasha. It's pasha within the neshama. Everything that the philosophers are trying to figure out, it's already pasha by the neshama. Where does that come from? Where does that faith come from? Zeo seder ashab, zeo mishum de mazlayu chazi. It's because the deepest part of the neshama sees reality differently than our eyes do. Hainu, meaning hanefesh k'meishu lamala, the soul as it is in its higher place. Harehi roya etzem mohus hadaver, it sees with its own eyes the truth. Eich shavai echad, how the Ribbono Shel Olam is just one, how there is only one God. The reality of the deepest part of the neshama is Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And so when that deepest part of the neshama tries to express itself, when a situation of difficulty comes to that to the neshama. The neshama, again, that part of the neshama doesn't have an issue of like whether there is a God. I mean, it's just a matter of coping with the darkness. It's a matter of how do I handle this? How do I go forward? How do I persevere through this darkness? What could I do to better my situation? But it's not a question of is there a Ribbono Shel Olam with me? Like, well, there is the Ribbono Shel Olam. What does that even mean? And so when that part of the neshama tries to express itself, that's how it comes out, a simple faith. It's obvious. Again, not to negate the importance of understanding, but once a person has that solid foundation of this is what reality is the Ribbono Shel Olam, then from that place of confidence and strength and security, now I could go start investigating and try to come up with answers and explanations of why this God is acting in the following way. But it has to be from that place of security. He says, that this truth, this perspective, it sparks. It's trying to come out. It sends signals from its deepest place, El Hanashama Misleshus Beguf, to the part of the neshama that's within the body that sees things from our perspective. So there's constant communication from the deepest part of the neshama that sees things from Hashem Echad, to the part of the neshama that's in the body that sees things from Baruch Shem. And that communication is called emunah. That's that communication. Now, by the way, let's understand. I want to take this a step further. Not only is this the nekuda that Chassidus focuses on in terms of emunah b'shuta. So in other words, in Chassidus, the objective of emunah, the objective of developing one's emunah, is to try to raise one's consciousness, to try to establish that inner perspective of Hashem Echad as the dominant perspective. That the Baal Shem Tov, according to Baal Shem Tov, the point of the Avodas Hashem, the point of Avodah of Emunah, is to try to open your eyes and to be able to give a deeper expression of that voice, to be able to open your eyes and see how everything is still part of the Rabbanu Shlom. Now let me explain. This Nakuda is not isolated when it comes to Emunah. This is the essential point of all of Taras HaBaal Shem Tov. All of Taras HaBaal Shem Tov is all focused on one essential Avodah, which is according to the Baal Shem Tov, the purpose of all of Avodas Hashem, the purpose of all of Avodas Hashem is to give us the ability to cross over that bridge from seeing things from our perspective to seeing things to God's perspective. That is the tachlis of all of Avodas Hashem. The tachlis of all of Avodas Hashem. And therefore, all the things in Chassidus that maybe seem to the outsider as a little bit odd and strange are all circling this one nekuda. This is why in Chassidus, Emunah Pshuta is the most important way of interacting with Rabbanu Shlom, because Emunah Pshuta is coming from that other side of the rainbow, the side of seeing things from the Rabbanu Shlom's perspective. This is why in Chassidus, davening is of greater, even somewhat greater significance than even learning. Why? Because when you talk about davening and learning, it could also be put in these categories. What's learning about? Learning, the objective of learning is empowering the person how to navigate through life properly, right? That's what it is. In other words, Torah learning assumes something. It assumes that there are certain things which are kosher and certain things which are treif. And Torah learning is, how do you navigate through life, making sure that you only eat the kosher things? That's what Torah learning is. Torah learning is about empowering you as a person to give you the ability to navigate through life properly. That's all from the perspective of reality from our side, that there is a creation, and the Rabbanu Shalom is just guiding us and instructing us, telling us what to do, and Torah tells us what that rule book is. Whereas, what is tefillah? The very, very deepest expression of tefillah is the human being putting their hands up and saying, Rabbanu Shalom, not only am I not in control. See, a simple way of looking at tefillah is the human being just expressing vulnerability and saying, listen, you know, I'm not in control of my parnas, I'm not in control of my health, I'm not in control of anything, Rabbanu Shalom, it's all you. But tefillah goes deeper than that. The deepest, the root of tefillah is that part of the neshama that doesn't even see itself as something independent from God. That's how helpless it feels by tefillah, in a good way. That's when the neshama opens up its hands, so to speak, in davening, it's not just saying, I need your help. It's saying that I am nothing, I am all I am is a part of you. Tefillah is a very, very strong way to give expression to that part of the neshama that sees the entire world as a part of the Rabbanu Shlom. So therefore, by the Taras HaChassidus, by the Baal Shem Tov, tefillah is put on a huge pedestal. Because tefillah is that side of Avodas Hashem which gives a voice to that side of Mitzidai, of Hashem's side, which is, according to the Baal Shem Tov, the entire purpose of Avodas Hashem is to get you to that place. This is why in Chassidus there's such a focus of like a tzaddik, right? Of finding like a Rebbe to attach yourself to. Like, what is that? For Americans in particular, it's like an alien idea. Even sometimes it feels not even Jewish somewhat. So what is that Avoda? It's also revolving around this nekuda. The nekuda is everything that it's creating a culture. It's creating a culture within which the Jewish person is able to move beyond the way they see things. In other words, we all see things as individual people. I see my world from my vantage point. But now when you have this system set up where there's like the tzaddik and you nullify your mavata yourself to the tzaddik, which however that means, we'll have to have a separate discussion about that by itself. But that the idea of having the tzaddik as the as sort of the center of the world of avoda, and your avoda is oriented as a part of that tzaddik's avoda. It's trying to create this system in which this avoda of moving from seeing things from my perspective to rather seeing things from the Rebbeinu Shlomo's perspective is being set up. Where in a smaller, in a miniature version, there's that system of the tzaddik, that I'm seeing things, my avoda is oriented based on the tzaddik's perspective. This is all what Teresa Chassidus is. This is what the Gra was fighting against. Like, in the whole Indian of the Misnagdim, of the Gra versus the Baal Shem Tov, like, what was the fight about? What were they fighting about? Bekishes and Strimals, you know, davening at 10:30 in the morning, like, what was the fight about? What was the fight about? So there was a lot of different layers to that machlokes, for sure. But when you dig down deep enough, the essential machlokes was this point: what is Avodas Hashem about? What is the point of Avodas Hashem? According to the Gra, the objective of Avodas Hashem is to stay in your lane. Stay in your lane. The Gra agrees. Of course, there's such a thing as seeing things as reality as the Rebbeinu Shlomo sees it. Of course, that's true. We say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad twice a day. So the Gra doesn't disagree with that. But the Gra's point, the Gra held, is that that's not the point of Avodas Hashem. The point of Avodas Hashem is to stay in your lane, stay in your box, see things the way you see them as the human being, which is that you are the human being, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is your king, and you navigate your life accordingly. And you believe, of course, there's such a thing that reality is a part of God somehow, but that's not what Avodas Hashem, that's not the goal of Avodas Hashem to get you to that place. That's the reward at the end of the day, as we'll talk about soon. But that's not what your Avodah is. That is exactly what the Baal Shem Tov disagreed upon. According to the Baal Shem Tov, no, that is Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem is to try to get yourself to see things from God's perspective, to have different eyes, to have a new set of eyes implanted within you, that when you open your eyes, you see things how the Rebbeinu Shlomo sees it. Eina Milvada. This is the ultimate machlekes between the Gra and the Baal Shem. So obviously this class is called 101, Chassidus 101, so we'll be, going more to the side of the Baal Shem Tov. But that's ultimately what the machlekes is. Now, let's understand. Let's go deeper. So if that's the machlekes between the Gra and the Baal Shem, so you know there's always an idea of Elo Ve'elo Dir Lekim Chaim, right? Everyone's true. So which one's right? Which one's right? So the truth is like this. You can't say one is right and one's wrong. You can't say that. It's like anything else. More often than not, it's a matter of timing. What do I mean? So you know there's a famous back and forth that took place between Rabbi Nachman and the Shebol Zayda. Rabbi Nachman and the Shebol Zayda was another Chassidish Rebbe. They did not get along. And so the Maisa goes that there was one of Rabbi Nachman's Chassidim in Shpola for Shabbos or whatnot. And the Shebol Zayda told him, you're going to go back to your Rebbe, Rabbi Nachman. Send him the following message. That it's not the pshat that I don't think he's a tzaddik. He's a big tzaddik. I think he's 200 years too early. So Rabbi Nachman, supposedly Rabbi Nachman sent the message back. They call you the Shpola Zayda because you're 200 years too late. So it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of what tekufa are you really coming from? Let's understand, it's a fascinating idea. The way the Rebbeinu Shlomo created neshamas is that you could have neshamas living in a certain time period to get mamash neighbors, but one neshama is really connected to an earlier time, and one neshama maybe is connected to a future time. And very often that's where the machlokes comes in. Not so much one's right and one's wrong, but it's a matter of timing. It's a matter of like what tekufa, what time period is the root of your neshama really attached to? So let's explain. Gra versus Baal Shem. Right or wrong? Chas v'shalom, they're both right. It's a matter of timing. What do I mean? So let me explain. What's the schar of Olam Haba? What's going to happen? What in Olam Haba we do mitzvahs and so on, and in Olam Haba is going to be a lot of reward. We're going to have unbelievable delight and pleasure. What's the pleasure of Olam Haba? The pleasure of Olam Haba is the pleasure that we will feel when we will transition from seeing things from our perspective to the Rebbeinu Shlomo's perspective. That is what Olam Haba is. Let me explain. There's different types of pleasures in the world, right? There's some types of pleasures which are more egocentric, more about you. In other words, you eat a good meal, it's about you. So there's a certain hana in that. But that's not a deep pleasure. The deeper pleasures in life are the pleasure are the pleasures that come when you become lost in something bigger. Like an example that Svarm give is that one of the deepest pleasures that a person can ever experience is being part of like a revolution. You know, you see this like in politics all the time. That even if it's a meshagas, but it's sweeping people. You know what I mean? You have thousands of people that just fall for this for craziness. Why? And they're mamish into it. Why? One of the reasons is because there's an intense pleasure when a person sees themselves as part of something much bigger. There's a pleasure in that. There's a deep pleasure in that. Another example is when people get swept up in music, right? So there are certain types of music that there's a certain pleasure in listening to music where you get lost in it. People that have ever gone to like, I don't know. I think the only concert I've ever been to was like Mordechai Ben David concert when I was like 8 or something. So I don't have much experience with this stuff. But from what I've heard or, you know, from people is that when you go to like an intense concert or a mosh pit or something like that, that's a good example. There's a certain tanug in that you are just, you're just part of the music. Or you're just part of the hundreds of people or whatever that are just moving and swaying and just becoming lost together in something. There's an intense pleasure in that. What is Olam Haba? The greatest pleasure that we could ever experience is becoming lost in the biggest thing to ever be, which is the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That's the greatest pleasure of all. This is the deep pleasure of like Dveikas. We taste that a little bit sometimes when like it's a good davening or a good, or it doesn't even be a good davening. A person, let's say, has a nisayon and they're Omer b'nisayon. There's a deep satisfaction in that because the neshama, what the neshama's feeling is that, I'm now connected to something much bigger. When a person learned, Rav Kook, for example, said that one of the greatest kavanas a person can have when you're learning, is the following thought. And he said, when you think this, it makes the learning different. The thing is, when you think like, I'm learning something that the Jewish people have been learning for centuries. When I'm learning a Rashi, it's stam a line of Rashi. This is a line of Rashi that millions of people have been learning, that will learn. I want to know what my people think about, and that's why I want to learn. To become part of something bigger. That's what Olam Haba is. In other words, what Olam Haba is the transition from moving from seeing things from our perspective, which is I am I and you are you and everyone's doing their thing, just trying to navigate through life. The absolute transition, the absolute change from our eyes to God's eyes, that's what Olam Haba is. So in this world, Olam Hazeh, the Ribbono Shel Olam created a world where the most obvious perspective is our perspective. There's a world and we have to navigate through it. What is Olam Haba? Olam Haba is completely God's perspective. So who's right? The Groh, the Baal Shem. It's timing. The neshama of the Groh and that entire world was very much connected with the tekufa of this world, of Olam Hazeh right now. And the world of right now is very much tilted towards our perspective. That's how we see things. The Ribbono Shel Olam is our king. That's what it is. And therefore, the neshama of the Groh, that entire Beis Medrash, that their neshamas are rooted in the world as it is right now, in the world of Golos, the world of the 6,000 years. So therefore, the Groh feels that the objective of this Hashem is stay in your lane and do the best you can within your world and navigate through life properly. That's what it is. Then the Baal Shem Tov disagreed. Why did the Baal Shem Tov disagree? Where is his disagreement coming from? The reason is because the neshama of the Baal Shem Tov, as it's explained by his students and the students' students, is that the neshama of the Baal Shem Tov was connected to a different time period. The neshama of the Baal Shem Tov was coming from the time period of La Silavi, of Olam Haba, of Yemais HaMashiach already. And the entire purpose of Hasidus, in a certain sense, is really to pave the way towards Mashiach, to give us a little bit of an opening, of a window into what's going to be then, and to therefore give us a little bit of not just a taste of that, but to give a little bit of a direction to Avodas Hashem to go in that way, to eventually lead to that place. This is the dichotomy between the Groh and the Baal Shem. It's not a machlokes of right or wrong. It's a matter of like, where are you holding? Where are you holding? And by the way, this is what makes life complicated. Because where a person can be holding individually can be, you know, in one place, and where we are as a people can be beyond that. That's a separate discussion. But this is what the Groh and the Baal Shem Tov was about. Again, this is the core principle of all of Chassidus. Now, what does this? What does this do? Now, a few more minutes, just to explain. By the way, if there's any questions, like you know, obviously you could interrupt me. I want to explain how there's one particular school of Hasidus that takes this idea that we've been discussing, these two voices, these two perspectives of the Nefesh, and explains how these two voices express themselves emotionally. And that's the school of Ishbitz. The Ishbitzer talks about this in great length. And in the world of Ishbitz, very often when you have a contradiction, it's okay just to remain with that contradiction. You don't have to find an answer. You don't always have to find an answer. In the writings of Ishbitz, we find that the human being is comprised of two very, very different emotions. Very different emotions, different ways of interacting with the world. One, in the writings of Ishbitzer, one side is called tekifus, which is confidence and security. And the other side of the human being is called yira, which is fear and insecurity. And, you know, not sure what tomorrow is going to bring. And every single one of us feel that way. Certainly, there are certain times, there are certain moments where we feel more confident, and other times we feel less confident and more insecure. And so where are these voices coming from? So very often, okay, where they come from, I don't know, it's because my mom didn't hold me enough, held me too much, all these different things. But deeper than that, in Ishbitz HaRadzin, it's explained that these two feelings that we all try to navigate with life through is coming from these two very, very deep voices within the neshama. There's a part of the neshama which is gra, you know, there's a part of the neshama which sees things from our perspective. That part of the neshama is very afraid of what's going to be tomorrow because it doesn't know. Who knows what's going to be tomorrow? How could I be certain that what I'm davening for is what I really need? How could I be certain that what I'm doing right now is the right thing? How do I know that this job is not gonna lead me in the wrong way? I have no idea. I'm trying to navigate through life. And life is difficult and it's open-ended. I don't know. I hope that God is my king, God's my light, and I'm trying to do my best to find that ultimate place. But right now, you know, that side of seeing, this is the shtickle paradox. That side of the neshama, which feels so independent, right? And feels like it has its own existence, it has its own power, it has its own direction, I'm going to navigate through life, is very insecure. Very insecure. Because there's so much pressure on it, right? When your mom is by yourself, and your entire future rests on nothing but your choices, that's a lot to handle. And so that part of the neshama, which is, again, the grub part of the neshama, the our side of things, our perspective type part of the neshama, is very much inclined to be passive, very much inclined to be fearful, and to be very cautious. Taken to an extreme, an unhealthy extreme, it's full of self-doubt, it doesn't have any confidence, it's full of anxiety. But there's another side of the neshama, which is the other side of what? Which is, it's not our world anyway. We're part of something much bigger called the Ribbono Shel Olam. That inner voice, where Emunah Pshuta comes from, what is that? How does that express itself in the psyche, with confidence and strength and security? Because whatever choices I make, I mean, ultimately the Ribbono Shel Olam has my back. So what is there to be worried about? Right? Like Rabbi Nachman said, the famous line, right? The world is a Gesher Tzar Moed, a narrow bridge. Ve'ikr Shel Olam Fachid Klal. Right? So it's a narrow bridge. That's a funny statement. The world's a narrow bridge. It means you make the wrong move, you fall off the bridge, right? So why shouldn't I be afraid? Why not be afraid? I understand that fear is not a good thing because it might hold me back from taking those steps forward, but Lamaisa, why am I not going to be afraid? The answer is that statement itself is expressing these two sides of reality. Like, yeah, there's a way of looking at things that it's a narrow bridge, and if you make the wrong move, you fall off. That's true. But, mitzad sheni, emunah pshuta. Mitzad sheni, there's a truth that the Ribbono Shel Olam has your back always. And in Ishbitz HaRadzin, we find that it's not so much a matter of trying to come up with an answer of how these two sides can go together. It's a matter of just embracing it and being able to figure out how to navigate properly, how to pick out the right message at the right time. So for example, if you take a look at Maromukah number 5. So the Me'e Shiloach in Parshas Noach writes the following thing. You remember at the end of the Mabul, after the Mabul was over, so the Ribbono Shel Olam made a sign, he sent a sign to Noach to show how the world is always going to be, right? He's not going to destroy the world again. A cloud and a rainbow coming out of the cloud. So he says like this, Anan, the cloud, Hainu Yir Vehester, that means fear and concealment. The cloud, the imagery of a rainbow, which is colorful and bright, coming out of a dark cloud. That's the Rabbanu Shalom is saying that from now on, that's what you're always going to feel. There's going to be a part of you which is a cloud. There's going to be a part of you which is nervous and not sure about your own future and not sure about the future of everything around you. And that's coming because there's a level of concealment and we don't see the Rabbanu Shalom everywhere, and it's, because we see things from our perspective. And from our perspective, God's our king, but I don't necessarily find him all the time, and you can mess up as an employee of the king. The keshes, however, what's the rainbow? The bright colors of the rainbow, hainu miftachoiz. That means confidence and strength and security. Ki b'kol toikif hayira, and what the Rabbanu Shalom is saying is that the sign of stable of stability, that's a sign of stability, that the world will always remain stable and will not be destroyed. The sign of stability for the world and for the individual person is a rainbow coming out of a cloud. B'kol toikif hayira, that... Of course, there's going to be a part of you that's nervous and anxious, and that's what's going to keep you on the straight and narrow. But at the same time, while you're being focused and guided by that fear, yilcha bitachon gadol, but you have to have that confidence and strength and security that as long as you're trying to do the right thing, the Rabbanu Shalom has your back. And one way or another, it'll work out. One way or another. V'zois hefticha kadosh baruch hu noach. And this is what the Rabbanu Shalom is promising Noach. Now, this is where the Ishbitzer says, and this is what we find in the Zohar Kaddish, that as you get closer to Mashiach, one of the signs, says the Zohar Kaddish, when you get closer to Mashiach, is Techze Kashta Begavdin Dehir, that you're going to find rainbows with very, very bright and shining colors. Notice it says the Zohar, the closer you get to Mashiach, the more the rainbow is more pronounced over the cloud. Meaning, Hainu, Shia Tukufis Mashem Yisbarach Boilet in Mefurish Negere Necha, says the Ishbitzer, it means that you get closer to Mashiach, it means that the part of the Nefesh, which sees things from the Rabbanu Shalom's perspective, which is exactly what's going to be fully revealed when Mashiach comes, which is where the Baal Shem Tov was coming from. As you get closer to Mashiach, that voice becomes stronger and stronger. And what that does psychologically to the person, to the Jewish people, is it gives us more confidence and strength. And to an extreme, to an unhealthy extreme, it makes us a little bit, whatchamacallit, like, jumping in head first, with a little bit, not cautious enough, a little bit too, I'm missing the word, too loose and too, without thinking things through. What? I'm sorry? Impulsive, that's the word I'm looking for, too impulsive. But that impulsivity that we find dafka before Mashiach comes, which we find it all the time. This is the meaning of the chutzpah before Mashiach. What's the chutzpah? Chutzpah Yazgi. The chutzpah before Mashiach is that voice. The chutzpah is coming from that voice inside that doesn't believe anything can be bad. Because ultimately everything is a part of the Rabbanu Shalom. Now what does that mean? Does that mean that everything has to work out the way I want it to work out? No. That's the immature way of hearing that voice. In other words, that voice inside says, Amunah Pshuta equals confidence, equals security, equals the rainbow, which says, no matter what happens, it's all the Rabbanu Shalom. The Rabbanu Shalom is always with you. There's no such thing as being away from him. It's not possible. So the problem is, very often that voice gets translated in our very primitive human brains as, well, that means that every decision I make right now is going to work out right away. Not necessarily. But what that confidence, what it's trying to say is that no matter what does happen, the Rabbanu Shalom has your back. And ultimately speaking, what's best for you is going to work. It's going to come at the end. The Rabbanu Shalom promises this because you're a part of him. And just as the Rabbanu Shalom is eternal, you're eternal. And just as the Rabbanu Shalom has his own best interests at heart, obviously, he has your best interests at heart. It's all one process of the Rabbanu Shalom himself expressing in the world. But it's a matter of trying to translate that confidence in the right way, of balancing it with the cloud, of not necessarily taking it in a crazy way of simple chutzpah like adolescence, of just, jumping in impulsively headfirst into everything that comes their way. That's the sign of our generation, of trying to allow that voice of confidence, the voice
that's coming from the other side of the rainbow, that's coming from the side of Mashiach, to give it expression. The rainbow, the colors of the rainbow should be pronounced and strong, but not to hear it in an immature way. Not to hear it in a way that, like, everything's fine, no matter what I do is all gevaldik, whatever, to be impulsive like that. It means the world is a narrow bridge, but the ikar shloi l'fachet klal. That's what it means. So in other words, what we're learning is an amazing thing, which is part of the avoid of amun upshuta is to build your confidence, to build your security, and to build that, to repeat to yourself, mamish, over and over again, the Rabbanu Shalom has my back. The Rabbanu Shalom has my back. And no matter what I'm going through in life, it doesn't matter whether I feel close or not feel close. The reality is I am close. It's enough to me whether I feel it or not. This is another major principle in Chassidus. If you take a look at Marmoka number 6, and learn with this, but we'll do Meirav in a few minutes, the Tiferes Yosef, who was a great-grandson of the Ishbitzer, so he writes in Parshas Hazinu, he says, Ki ha-shamayim meramzim al behiras gadol. What does heaven mean? Heaven always represents clarity, right? It means clarity. Rabbanu Shalom, his presence is felt, he's known. Va'aretz merames al astaris. Earth always represents concealment, confusion. Sheheitzev Hashem Yisbarach ha-velmaz, and that's how Hashem created the world. There's heavens and there's earth. And we're stuck on earth. What are we supposed to do? And the human being has always been dreaming about going to heaven. Right? Why do you think NASA is spending billions of dollars dafka before Mashiach comes? Dafka before Mashiach comes in order to get to heaven. Because we're sick of Hester Panim. We're sick of Hester Panim. And that desire to have Mashiach, that desire to have Gilui Panim, to have the Rabbanu Shalom's presence revealed already, it's getting so deep that it's even getting, even Washington is feeling it. That's where this desire is coming from. It's not because they want to find a little Martian. There's a part of them that wants to, like the little kid that just wants to find the Martian somewhere. There's a part of that also. But it's deeper than that. It's much deeper than that. Ube'emes, but said the Yishbitzer. The truth is, Zehakol mitzad abriya, this is all from our perspective. The entire divide between heaven and earth is our perspective. That there should be a difference between the Rabbanu Shalom revealing himself and not revealing himself. From the Rabbanu Shalom's perspective, ain't shum nafkim mina bin shmayim v'aretz. What's the difference between heaven and earth? From the Rabbanu Shalom's perspective, it's all a part of him. You don't feel him. Okay, you feel me. It doesn't change anything. The reality is, it's all the Rabbanu Shalom anyway. Hainu shem adam mamik ba'avoida. If a person deepens one's avoida, amuna pshuta, if a person gives deeper expression to that voice of confidence and truth and security, yachal lahakar ha'arman aretz, and you'll find light on earth. You won't have to go to heaven. That's the Radziner, the Rishner used to say. He said that before Mashiach, he said this 200 years ago, more than that. He said that before Mashiach comes, you're going to find it's going to be commonplace for human beings to fly to outer space, to fly to the skies, to the heavens. It's going to be commonplace. But for a Jew to have the strength of flying to the inner recesses of their own soul, that's going to be very rare. That's what he said. This is what Amun Upshuta is. Amun Upshuta, therefore, when a person finds that place of mushud, that place of inner confidence, it no longer bothers them whether things make sense. It no longer bothers them whether there's Hester Panim, Gilui Panim. You could even celebrate Hester Panim. That's what Purim is. What's Purim? Purim is such a funny yontif. Even the word Megillas Esther, right? It's a yontif which is about the greatest revelation. Rabbanu Shalom is showing his hand that he's manipulating even Haman and Achashverosh. Mamash, the whole thing is Rabbanu Shalom, and that's the word Megillah is to be revealed. Yet, not one mention of God's name in the entire Megillah. Esther. Concealment. Megillas Esther. What type of yontif is this? It's a yontif of revelation. It's a yontif of concealment. Purim is the deepest of yontivim. Purim is a yontif where it's a Mashiach dikki yontif. It's a Baal Shem Tov Dikei Yontif. The Yontif of Purim is a Yontif where we're given, for at least that day, through alcohol sometimes, we're given a different pair of eyes. And we begin to see things from the Rabbanu Shalom's perspective, and it doesn't matter whether it's Baruch Mordechai or Haman. It's a Nafka Mina. Ad L'Yad, it doesn't matter. What's the difference? Hester, Helam, Megillah, Esther. It's all, we should celebrate everything. That's why Purim is only one day. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't, you know, you can't carry over, you know, because it doesn't really fit in this world. It's not really Mihai Alma. It's coming from a higher place, coming from a distant future. No, hopefully not too distant future. But that's what Purim is. That the whole Yontif of Purim is celebrating. It's struggling with this dynamic of the greatest revelation of the deepest part of the Neshama, the greatest revelation of godliness, which is Soviv Kalam, that he surrounds all worlds, itself allows room for Hester Ponen. It doesn't. It allows the Jewish person to embrace confusion. This is why Yontif of Purim is always, it's always about Makam, where you are, right? It's only, if you think about it, it's only Yontif, Purim is only Yontif, where, when the Yontif is, it depends where you live. What type of business is that? Pesach is always Pesach, Rosh Hashanah. No, Purim, if it's at a walled city, it's this day. Unwalled city, it's a different day. Makam. Hu Makam Shalom Ve'enel Makam, because Purim is a Yontif where the Rabban Shalom is the place, that it's celebrating that aspect of the Rabban Shalom, which is He is the place that everything exists in. And so therefore, even the halachas of Purim are reflective of that it depends where you live. What is your makim? What is your makim? That's the answer of Purim is. That's why it's hard to explain Purim. That's the point. You don't have to explain it. It's not necessary to explain. It's not necessary to explain. No, akapanim, this is what the halach is. So this is what the amun pshut is. So let me give you a little bit of homework. Next week we're going to get like halach lemais, like what are some disciplines that we can begin to do to give expression to that amun pshuta, that confidence and so on. But one simple thing that I'm thinking right now for myself is maybe for the next, over the next few days, whatever it is, to find the time to just to repeat over to ourselves. We different situations, we find ourselves in today, like Hashem has our back. Hashem has my back. You just talk to Rabban Shalom in that way, and to believe and to say out loud, maybe by yourself, otherwise you look a little bit crazy, but just to say out loud, the Rabban Shalom has my back. Whatever is happening, the Rabban Shalom is experiencing it with me, through me. That gives Amunah Pshuta. That's where Amunah Pshuta is coming from. You have that voice inside, confusion, darkness. It doesn't really matter. That's where Jewish strength comes from. That's the miftach eyes. That's the colors of the rainbow. No, we should be zeicha to see the shining colors of the rainbow in a right way. Okay.